Because of Nakamoto's deliberate actions and Bitcoin's permissionless, free, and open-source nature, Bitcoin is the first truly neutral money. Bitcoin eliminates the inherent unfairness that comes with all previous monies, as well as any need to trust a third party in order to use Bitcoin. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am your host, Guy Swan, the guy who's read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We've got another Bitcoin Magazine piece for today. Still not done with Bitcoin Astronomy Part 2, but it is coming along, and I'm still knocking out chapters of Layered Money and by Nick Bhatia and Jesse Berger's Magic Internet Money, and they are so good. I'm really excited to feel like I'm getting close to the end of these here. I'm going to put my nose to the grind and get these things done. But we've got another one from Bitcoin Magazine today for the podcast. Returning author, my boy Christian. You know him as CK Snarks on Twitter. And then also co-authored by a first-time author on the show, Denise Syatt. This one is all about the Cantillon effect, the inherent unfairness of our current monetary system and systems, actually. And I think this is one of the most potent arguments to leverage. It's like what we talked about in the show last week from McCormick's and Andy Edstrom's piece on Bitcoin Magazine, The Winning Hearts and Minds for Bitcoin. This is one of those essential elements of Bitcoin that must be understood and genuinely can't be argued against without abandoning logical or moral consistency. But before we get into the article, let's take a second and thank our wonderful sponsors. We've got Level.co. They are a free exchange and mobile banking services. They're available in 28 states with more to come. A Bitcoin account with no fees to convert dollars or trade, direct deposit, debit card, ACH and wire transfers, and even more in their incredibly affordable premium option. So how do you go wrong? Then you've got, for your savings, you got the BitBox O2 from Shift Crypto, an easy-to-use, secure, open-source, Swiss-made hardware wallet for your serious cold storage and hodling your own keys. Find them both at the top of the page at guyswann.com. A huge thank you to those guys for supporting Bitcoin Audible, and if you would like to support the show or share a product or service that you have that you think this audience would love, the link to contact me is at the bottom of guyswan.com as well. But without further ado, let's get into today's read, again from Bitcoin Magazine, and it is titled Cantillon Effect 2.0. Bitcoin is the world's first truly fair money, by Christian Carrolls and Dennis Saat. This essay strives to explain the Cantillon effect and how the natural unfairness of all previous monies has always created a world in which the privileged few could take advantage of the unprivileged many. We explore how Bitcoin, as the world's most fair money, alleviates the prevalence of the Cantillon effect and creates a fairer, more equitable, and prosperous world for all. What is the Cantillon effect? Quote, the Cantillon effect refers to the change in relative prices resulting from a change in money supply. The change in relative prices occurs because the change in money supply has a specific injection point, and therefore a specific flow path through the economy. The first recipient of the new supply of money is in the convenient position of being able to spend extra dollars before prices have increased. But whoever is last in line receives his share of new dollars after prices have increased. Nicholas Kakanowski, American Institute for Economic Research, IRE. We saw the Cantillon effect in 2008 and 2020, when banks and other companies were given bailouts to avoid bankruptcy. These are practical case studies that demonstrate the effectiveness of having direct connections to Wall Street and the Federal Reserve. Only those closest to the individuals controlling the money supply were able to greatly benefit from each recession, while many in the middle and lower classes did not. Today, this can be easily observed in the recent stimulus package being debated in the United States. While senators squabble for months over the amount of money citizens would receive, there is nothing but bipartisan, silent consensus on the billions of dollars in fresh money going to support massive organizations and interests outside of the direct stated purposes of the bill. The Cantillon effect runs the world. Money has never been fair. Non-neutrality of money means that money is not created and distributed among a population evenly or fairly. There is an inherent unfairness to money creation, and the easier the money is to create, the more unfair it is for those without authority and access to certain connections. To put it frankly, getting ahead in life can be catalyzed by getting closer to the money printer. When people talk about institutionalization, what they are really referring to are the rules for getting closer to the money printer today. To the untrained eye, America looks like the land of prosperity. But once the blinders have been lifted, reality shows that it is just the land closest to the money printer. If you zoom out even more, it becomes clear that everyone living in the U.S. and receiving U.S. dollars directly is inherently living in a privileged position compared to anyone else in a similar position, but not receiving USD directly. This scales up toward the elites, who are truly close to the printer, and down to the poor. The Cantillon effect is not just true for fiat, but it is also true for precious metals as well. Precious metals, mainly gold and silver, historically have been the best available monetary goods humanity could harness. Unfortunately, the mining, custody, and validation processes needed for a properly running precious metals economy created weakness for opportunistic central operators to benefit from a privileged position. The Spanish price revolution, caused by the mining of newfound gold and silver in America, wreaked havoc across Europe and arguably ended the unprecedented growth of the Renaissance. Spanish royalty reaped the benefits from the newfound specie, while people across Europe found the buying power of their gold and silver eroding. History is riddled with cases of debasements, coin clipping, and other violations of the fairness of a precious metal system. Ultimately, the failures of precious metals in scaling to a digital global world, as well as the inability to defend against centralization, confiscation, and newfound supply, has led to the introduction of the far more unfair fiat monetary systems that we live with today. Enter Bitcoin. On January 3rd, 2009, Satoshi Nakamoto mined the very first block of the Bitcoin blockchain with the message, "The Times, January 3rd, 2009, Chancellor on brink of second bailout for banks." The headline from the Times newspaper of London that morning. This was not only a message from Nakamoto about their intentions to create a more fair money, but it effectively timestamped and proved the fair launch of the Bitcoin currency. Because of Nakamoto's deliberate actions and Bitcoin's permissionless, free, and open-source nature, Bitcoin is the first truly neutral money. Bitcoin eliminates the inherent unfairness that comes with all previous monies, as well as any need to trust a third party in order to use Bitcoin. Bitcoin aligns incentives. The Cantillon Effect 2.0 is introduced to the world by Bitcoin. In a Bitcoin world, rather than being rewarded for privilege, status, and geography, only those living closer to the truth can reap the fruits of value creation. Quote, "The only way to get Bitcoin is to acquire it from someone else. You pretty much cannot steal Bitcoin. You have to provide something of value and someone else has to willingly part with their Bitcoin. I think the profundity of that cannot be overstated. There is no other way to extract value from the global markets than to be productive, and I think this is an enormous change for society. Gigi, engineer at Swan Bitcoin. From Bitcoin's Nature on the Bitcoin Magazine podcast. The transition towards a Bitcoin standard is an awakening of truth and reality. Bitcoin eliminates the ability for institutions to go against the market because one cannot create Bitcoin out of thin air without an exorbitant amount of energy to mine it. Creating more than 21 million Bitcoin is impossible because the 21 million supply cap is enforced by a distributed network of independent nodes. For the first time in history, Bitcoin offers individuals a means for accurate economic calculation. Bitcoin makes the use of violence to extract value much less scalable. Because Bitcoin enables easy custody and validation of one's Bitcoin, Bitcoin users no longer need to rely on central institutions to hold their wealth. Because of this distribution of keys and the fact that there is no way to move coins without actually getting control of a Bitcoin private key, spending key, censors or thieves now must go from key holder to key holder and extort each individual key. We are seeing technology shift the logic of violence on a fundamental level. Gone are the days that a government can simply freeze one's bank account. This increased cost in the extortion and control of a population's wealth is a fundamental shift in how the world is presently organized. The defensibility Bitcoin gives individuals and companies alike is discussed in depth in the recent Bitcoin Magazine article, The Sovereign Company Thesis. A link to the Bitcoin Audible version of that article is also available in the show notes. A transparent future allows for more opportunity. We are all very aware of what a closed and centralized monetary system leads to because we live through it every day. Centralization certainly has its use cases, but not when there is a lack of accountability for the dilution of an individual's labor. Creating money from nothing continues to plague a person's productivity and ability to get ahead in life. With Bitcoin, the accountability is placed on the individual rather than an institution or a self-appointed bureaucrat who are too far removed from the realities of most people's situations. There are very few people who understand how money is created and how governors within the Federal Reserve branches decide on, quote, acceptable inflation rates. How much is too much inflation versus how little is too little? Fiat becomes more akin to improv theater than actual science. Rules are broken when deemed necessary by those in power, while citizens of nations have no say in what is best for their monetary interests. In contrast, Bitcoin's consensus rules are unchanging, and its code is upgraded extremely slowly with world-class peer review. Unlike your iPhone, which breaks down if not upgraded, Bitcoin upgrades are optional, and users opt in on a volunteer basis. The Bitcoin network's consensus is purer than democracy. It does not seek to take away from the productive in order to support the rent-seeking or parasitic. It continues to incentivize the best outcomes for all participants, especially when that means forcing individuals to be more productive in order to acquire more Bitcoin. In the last 12 years of Bitcoin's existence, one would be hard-pressed to find someone who has not yet heard of the digital currency. However, up until this point, it has taken an abnormal amount of curiosity to find out what money really is, how it is created, how it has been used throughout history, and what successfully makes a currency or store of value versus what does not. Today, Bitcoin is the viral orange pill, waking the world to what our current monetary system is and how it affects our daily lives. In a Bitcoin-based world, rather than a world where benefits are unfairly accrued to those who have the right social positioning and leverage, value is accrued by those creating value, those who are closer to the truth. Ultimately, Bitcoin enables individuals the ability to opt out and build outside of the existing constructs of control. These benefits are not experienced equally. The earlier an adopter is, the more they are rewarded, as it should be within a truly fair system. Bitcoin rewards the curious. We all find Bitcoin at the time we deserve it most. There are those who held Bitcoin really early but are no longer involved with the space. Some people have to travel the more excruciating journey of finding Bitcoin very early to only cash out of their position before huge value is unlocked. Not just with Bitcoin's price, but in unlocking the true potential of productive individuals who are not in the most ideal situations. Bitcoin changes that by being accessible to anyone with an internet connection. With the introduction of the internet and access to information, Bitcoin will play a similar role in continuing to expose the opaque practices of centralized banking networks. A transparent future allows for more opportunity. What happens to the world when there is money that truly comes with no baked-in privilege? Welcome to the Bitcoin Renaissance. A special thanks to Gigi for the inspiration and thoughtful editing. This is a guest post by Christian Carrolls and Denise Saad. Opinions expressed are entirely their own and do not necessarily reflect those of BTC Incorporated or Bitcoin Magazine. That'll do it. Let's hit our sponsor really quick, and we will jump back in and get Guy's take on the Cantillon Effect 2.0. Level.co, LVL.co. Who are these guys? Maybe you've heard of them. They are a no-fee exchange. They have a freemium model. That's right. Even though I don't personally recommend trading, I know there's a lot of degenerates out there who like to play that game. And if you don't want to get eat up by fees, Level.co is the only option. But some of you actually just want to live entirely in Bitcoin. You just want to get away from fiat altogether. This is how you do it. They are a full mobile banking service. You can convert to dollars on the fly, again with no fees. You get direct deposit, do your Level account. You get ACH and wire transfers, and you get a debit card. And again, this is the freemium version. You literally only pay a small fee for a withdrawal. With the premium, that costs just $9 a month, which is basically a coffee if you're going to get it with coconut milk, two extra shots, and four pumps of vanilla syrup, you get even more. A world debit card, autopilot trading, and chat with a personal banker. They are available on both Android and Apple in 28 states and counting, hoping to be with 94% of the U.S. population by the end of 2021. Check them out at guyswan.com/level. This is where I think, and I've said this many times now, one of the most potent arguments for Bitcoin rests is there are so many political and moral platitudes about equality and equal opportunity and just the idea that this should be democracy and that this should be the will of the people. You know, you got to put that to the test. You got to ask them what they mean by that, because you'll turn right around and have people who drop all of these empty platitudes that they don't even know how to explain or that they don't actually believe in, because they just think that it supports some vision of the world that, you know, the government can enforce. Is that you have to challenge that. Do you actually believe in equality? Well, that means that everyone has equal rights. That means that no one has control over the money. Do you support a money that supports equality? Do you support a fair money? Because if you don't support equality. You can't say, oh, I want equality, but then reject the very system that would give you real equality so that you can create some center of power that manipulates the economy and gives powerful incentives and privileged positions to this basically this monetary elite. If you think that's a good working system, then you don't believe in equality. You believe in privilege. You believe in a top-down hierarchical authoritative system. And that is what will best bring out a good thing for society by having The stupid plebs have no control or say over their own monetary well-being or their financial decisions or which money they should actually choose or get to use. You don't want society to determine that. You don't want people to democratically decide for themselves. You don't want them to have equal rights. You don't want them to have any degree of fairness or equal authority over their own lives as other people have over their lives. You don't want any of that because that's not what any of that is. That is the Cantillon effect. That is... They actually say Deniz, it's D-E-N-I-Z, so I'm just going to refer to it as Dennis, just because that's easier. Sorry if that's not quite the proper pronunciation. But what he and CK say in this article is that there's never been a fair money, and a truly fair money before. And that's actually not that ridiculous of a statement. Like, I actually think that's pretty accurate. Granted, gold is about the closest you get simply because gold is a naturally defined money. There is no monetary policy of gold. It's the atom of gold. The universe dictates its monetary policy. However, in the context of society, no one has actually ever been able to secure, I guess you could say, at scale, that verifiability of gold. Gold has always been so costly to prove the atomic monetary policy, I guess you could say, of gold, that it's always been open to corruption. It failed every time it attempted to scale. Because at the end of the day, you have to have a trusted third party to verify it. You have to have a trusted third party to issue paper notes against it so that it can actually work in the digital age. It works great as a reliable money when you're in the Stone Age and all your transactions are hand-to-hand and, you know, there's no telegraph to send a wire, you know, 20,000 or 2,000 miles away to the other side of the country. And you know, try to make a transaction from North Carolina with somebody in California. When that technology exists, gold fails. Gold just stops working as money, and it becomes a trusted system that is absolutely reliant on a third party. And that's aside from the fact that even to verify a gold coin is incredibly costly. Like, you know, like if you had to, you end up having to trust something. You either trust the stamp on the coin, or you trust the mint, and that, you know, that's actually kind of trusting the mint themselves or the banking institution or whoever it is, because you can't melt down every gold coin. Like, you might end up spending the value of the gold coin just trying to prove that the gold coin is in fact gold. And that's the verifiability cost. And that is one of the most beautiful things about Bitcoin, is the shrinking of that cost specifically in an asset that simultaneously you can send over a communications line. You can send over a telegraph. You could Morse code a Bitcoin transaction in not too long a time from North Carolina to California. It's just really hard to illustrate how profound of a development as far as monetary systems goes. And at the exact same time, to have this enabled, the verifiability and the portability, the ability to move this thing within a system that has no owner, that has no trusted third party, that is provably fair, where equality in the truest sense, every participant who plays in this system plays by the same rules. The refs play by the same rules as the other players in the game. Everyone is equal. That's genuinely unheard of in the history of monetary systems. That is unique to Bitcoin. And the Cantillon effect, which, you know, this article is kind of the crux of their argument here, is the idea that there are two prices of money. Or in a general sense, there are disparate groups in society that get money at different prices. So when there's $1 million in circulation, the price of money, like the price of the economy, is, you know, divided up by a million. Whatever, however many assets there are divided by a million, that's the amount of money Or excuse me, that's the amount of goods that each dollar represents. And if there is a money spigot, if there is a money creator that can create an additional $1 million, what's happened is that half of the value of all the previous $1 million has been stolen from the economy, but the resources haven't been removed yet. So what happens is that everybody who is holding the first $1 million doesn't know. But then here comes this other entity that gets $1 million from the money spigot, or the tree that, you know, money grows on, that only one person gets the seeds of and everybody else gets put in jail or killed for growing it. They get that next $1 million first. All the prices still behave as if there are $1 million in circulation, whereas they get to purchase all of the assets while they're still, as if their $1 million doesn't exist yet. So they bid up the prices of everything. They essentially now have the ability to buy half of the resources in the economy for having done absolutely nothing, given no productive capacity, done no value or fair trade to anybody else in the economy. They simply get to do so because they got money at a price that was half the real price, because they got it before it entered the actual circulation. And then the more it trickles down, that's the quote-unquote trickle-down economy. It's just the Cantillon effect. It's just the wealthy get wealthier, and they get the price of money that's dirt cheap and available, and they buy up all the resources and the hard assets that everybody else wants to actually save their value. And then it trickles down and loses more and more value every step of the way until it finally hits the middle class, the lower middle class, and the poor, in which the price of money is back up to what it actually should be. And it's very hard to get, it's very costly, and it means you have to work your butt off day and night to actually get any value out of it. This creates a political elite. This creates a class of people that can be zombies, that can destroy value but constantly return profits, that can soak up resources and hard assets out of the economy even though they're doing nothing to put back into it, or at least they're proportionally destroying resources or consuming resources over a long enough span of time, and basically putting the economy in a situation of excess, of increased fragility and vulnerability, because their enterprises, these massive enterprises, literally don't produce value. They just bleed. They bleed the whole economy dry through the mechanism of getting the money before prices rise. And early on in this article, there's a quote talking about the 2008 and 2020 financial crises, is that, quote, only those closest to the individuals controlling the money supply were able to greatly benefit from each recession. Greatly benefit. That's the key word. While many in the middle and lower classes did not. So while the average person got obliterated, there are financial crises because of the amount of pain and destruction and poverty they induced. They're not crises because good things happened. And yet the very people who are most responsible for those crises, who leveraged themselves to such an astronomical degree to bet all of our pensions and jobs and houses into this over-leveraged system that was bound to collapse, they got bailed out. It wasn't merely that they weathered the storm because of their access to the free newly issued money supply. They benefited. They got rewarded for their leveraging. They got rewarded for their irresponsible behavior. They got rewarded for burning other people's retirements and destroying their livelihoods because the government bailed them out because they were too important to let fail. That's such a staggering moral hazard. That's such a horrible, poisonous thing to let exist in the world. And it is the damn definition of injustice. Literally, the middle and lower classes, who are propping up all of this value to begin with, get robbed to make sure the elite stay the elite. That is what's happened. and it's happened again, and it keeps happening until we fix the monetary system. And there is no, oh, let's get together and have a discussion about it. Mike, whatever, from Macro Voices the other day, if y'all haven't seen that, what a ridiculous thing. Was talking about how we need to have a national discussion about the monetary system. That's what we're having. There's no national discussion. Like, all 300 million of us can get on a chat and let's talk about the monetary system. That's completely idiotic. What we have is a political system that pretends to be working for the everyday man, that is absolutely, obviously working solely for the elite. It's an incentive structure that rewards abuse, and there is no way to not make it abused. It is inherent to how the thing works. If you create a central power of corruption and abuse, it's going to be corrupted and abused. End of story. There's no let's get the right angels involved so that they don't get, oh good God, Janet Yellen just actually had a tweet today about this exact thing, is that she said, let me find it real quick. Okay, here it is. Economics isn't just something you find in a textbook. It can be a potent tool to right past wrongs and improve people's lives. That's why so many of the Treasury's 84,000 public servants joined the department. Today, I am proud to be one of them. First off, that's 84,000 people that need to lose their job. Economics is not a game. Economics is not a tool to right past wrongs. Money is not a way for you to implement, to force your utopian vision of the world onto everyone else. The very tool that allows you to quote-unquote right past wrongs is why there are so many wrongs that we need to right. That's literally like saying lobbying is a powerful tool to protect small business, and then pretending that it's not big business that's going to win the lobbying game. You're creating a tool to control people's lives, to destroy their livelihoods. The piece in this article talking about how the stimulus package being debated. And I don't even know where the hell it is right now. Who cares? It's garbage. But that they'll just bitch and moan over months and months about how much money they're going to give to the average citizen. But nobody questions the 5,600 excess pages of insanity. There's nothing, I love this quote, there is nothing, quote, but bipartisan silent consensus on the billions of dollars in fresh money going to support massive organizations and interests outside of the direct stated purposes of the bill. Are those the rights that you're, the wrongs that you're writing, Janet Yellen? Is that it? That's the consequences of your tool that you're using to better society. It's 5,600 pages of not helping anybody, of bowing to special interests, of giving them a tool to rob us. That is what you're doing. And you'll call it writing wrongs on freaking Twitter, but you'll never do anything about it. There's no way to stop it. You created a system of corruption, and that's the only way it can be used. You destroy the ring of power. You don't put it on and try to make the world to your vision. Such a ridiculous statement. This is a hot topic with me. there was a tweet earlier today, actually, and this was like right on point with I think it was Gigi's comment that was quoted in this. My Gigi impression was dog shit. I'm sorry about that, Gigi. what was it? Where is this? Something in here. Oh, the distribution of keys. Okay, so the Bitcoin removes the payoff of violence at scale. So here's kind of the beautiful simplicity of the corruption of money, is that it's the ability to enact violence. Like, theft is violence. Theft is to make someone a slave to someone else without their consent. You know, if somebody uses your body without your consent, you know, in a sexual way, it's rape. In a any other physical or laborious context, it's slavery. Like if you have to work for somebody else for 5 days of the week and there's nothing you can do, and you're either jailed or beaten or having you have your things confiscated, whatever it is, if you have no option, there's no consent, and you are forced to do this, that is slavery. The beauty, the malicious beauty of doing this through the money, is that no one knows that they're a slave. Is that you don't realize that you've been a slave to somebody else's life. And if you're only a slave for $2 of your day and you made $50, maybe you don't even realize. But you get to enslave the whole country. You get to enslave the whole world. Everybody who uses this currency to $2. You make yourself a master by your access to money that you didn't have to work for. Money that can be printed outside of the rules. It is an explicit exploitation of a position above the rules of the game that everyone else is forced to play. So let's take this in the context of a sport, if we want to understand how it is that everyone is playing by the same rules versus, you know, being a Cantillon, gaining access to the Cantillon effect. So in the context of a sport, no one should get a point if they didn't score a goal, right? It would make no sense whatsoever. And it would totally destroy the very purpose of the game for one team to just start off with 20 points while the other team starts with zero. So let's use football as an example. We've got two teams. We've got the average schmucks versus the Cantillionaires. Cantillon effect, going back to this article, the main idea of the Cantillon effect is getting access to a price of money prior to other parties. They get access to the price of new money at the valuation of the old money supply. So that's the main idea, but it actually manifests itself in numerous different ways in the economy. It's in access to loans that don't have market prices, so they're incredibly low interest loans. It's getting the money, whether it be in a loan or just direct money printing or subsidies through the government, that allows them to buy hard assets before those assets are bid up in price. That's the price of money at an old supply valuation rather than the new. And then having access to political privilege, because the government is able to spend with reckless abandon, and they have a printing press to fulfill any obligations. So it has access to impossibly low interest rates through this special elite club of political access that they can then lend down the ladder to make free returns on capital that they never lifted a finger to acquire. And this is all on top of the disaster that is fractional reserve. This isn't even accounting for the fact that fractional reserve is just inherently the same disaster of a system. This is also inherent to both. So these are compounded on top of each other. Go back up to our football example. This is the average schmucks and the Cantillionaires. This is, you know, the normal in football. Everybody has the normal 10 yards to a first down. You get 6 points for a touchdown, 1 point for a field goal. And of course, the field is 100 yards long. The Cantillon effect is that, let's say the Cantillionaires get the ball. They run a couple of plays, three to be exact. They're on the fourth down, and they've only advanced 8 yards. Well, in their final play, a judge declares that it just only takes 8 yards to get a first down now, which coincidentally they had achieved. So here we are, first down, awesome. Cantillionaires are off to a really great start. Now they get 3 more first downs at 8 yards a pop, and now they're 20 yards away from the end zone. The Cantillionaires' coach happens to be really good friends with the ref, and they call a penalty on the other team for offsides. Because when they blew the whistle, the offense was too close to the defense because they had just decided in that moment before they blew the whistle that there was going to be another yard of distance between the offense of the defense and the defense. And the defense had now broken this new set of rules. So they got penalized 5 yards. They had to go back 5 yards. And on the back of that penalty, they decided that they're also going to move the end zone to the 80-yard line. So now Cantillion here scored a touchdown. And this is also also in this new set of rules. And we didn't find out because it was on like page 2,843 of these new rules that they published before anybody read it. Nobody got to, none of the refs read it, none of the judges read it. Nobody actually got to read this thing because the Cantillionaires got it pushed through in about 20 minutes flat. And it was, you know, 7,000 pages long. Well, it just so happens that the new touchdown is worth 13 points instead of 6. And then they go to kick a field goal and they miss it. But the football authorities get together and decide that it's really better for the fans if the field goal is actually 10 feet wider than it actually is. And then they look at the playback and assess that the kick appears to be, in fact, inside of the new goalpost dimensions for the more equitable score of an additional 5 points for the field goal. Then when this gets handed over to the average schmucks, everything happens in the exact opposite fashion. The field gets longer, the refs call bullshit penalties on them, and completely ignore when they're getting throat punched by the Cantillionaires. The first downs get longer and longer, and for some random reason, they only get 3 tries to reach it. And a touchdown is now worth 5 points, and only half the time is a field goal worth any points at all. And this is what happens every single time. The Cantillionaires get free points. They constantly get the rules changed in their favor. They play by a set of interest rates and a price of money and a cost of actually making progress on the field that is inaccessible to the average schmucks. How unfun would that game be? How ridiculous of a thing. How could you even watch it without getting infuriated? That is what's happening in our financial system. That is our monetary system. The analogy isn't even all that far off. It's actually a pretty decent manifestation of all the different ways that that this class of people who are closer to the money get access to things at cheaper rates, at ridiculous. I mean, how many people went to jail over HSBC's multi-billion dollar money laundering scheme for violent, murderous drug cartels? How many people? None. How many people went to jail over the 2008 financial crisis? One poor bastard who had nothing to do with it. Trillions of dollars in fraud and over-leveraging other people's pensions, livelihoods, and houses. Millions of average schmucks paid the price, and not a single banker went to jail. In fact, they got bailed out. And it's hard to explain how insane that is. It's like at the end of the game, the average schmucks pulled in 50 at the end of this crooked, stupid, idiotic game that the average schmucks should not even be playing. At the end of the game, they come in with 50 points. The Cantillionaires come in with 180 points. And yet, the Cantillionaires had placed a $1 billion bet that they would make 200 points, and they only came in at 180. And what happens is the average schmucks get robbed of 40 points. And it's given to the Cantillionaires just so they don't lose their bet. So after we had to suffer through this insane, idiotic, corrupt game, we still pay for their loss. Bitcoin is the exit door. Stop playing that game. It does not work in our favor. If they want to play this backward, idiotic game of football, let them. But don't sit in the stands and let them get away with it. Don't participate. Don't watch the game. Don't buy the tickets. Don't buy the popcorn or the hot dogs. Go play a different game. Bitcoin is a game where everyone knows the rules explicitly, and not a soul, not the coach, not the ref, not the judge, not the head of the NFL, nobody on the planet can alter those rules. And everyone is a ref. Everyone can call penalty. You can call penalty with your Bitcoin node on the largest bank in the world, and there's nothing they can do about it. They get no privilege. They get no 8-yard first down. They get nothing. They either play the game by the fair, verifiable, publicly accessible, and open rules, or they don't get to play the game at all. How could you possibly justify having a system that defends all of our livelihoods, all of our dreams, and all of our hopes, and every day and night, blood, sweat, and tears of our work, with anything but absolute equality and fairness? There is no argument there. Anyway, this was a long rant. I just went on for like 2 hours. I've been recording this. What are we at, 30 minutes almost? Okay. this one got me riled up. Thank you to CK and Dennis for putting this piece together. And of course, Bitcoin Magazine for making this available. Great piece. I love that. Love that concept. Like, this is about fair money and ending and just shutting down in any way possible, giving people an exit, a life raft to abandon a broken, unjust system. Just get off the hamster wheel and get Bitcoin. And like Gigi said, within the rules, there is no way to get Bitcoin except by providing productive value to another person in the economy. It is through trade. It is through fair, voluntary trade. That is the only foundation to build a good society on. A huge thank you to our sponsors, the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet for your cold storage, and Level.co for your mobile Bitcoin banking and free exchange. Check them out at guyswan.com. And if you want to sponsor Bitcoin Audible, you can become a patron. You can always donate over Lightning. You can share it out. And you can also hit me up if you got a product or service at sponsor@thecryptoeconomy.com. Or you can just go to the bottom of the page at guyswan.com. It is all right there. Thank you to everyone who does support this show. It really means the world, and this show wouldn't be here without you. I am Guy Swan. Thank you so much for listening. I will catch you on tomorrow's episode. And until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you are listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.